What's up, everybody? Welcome into the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. Thanks, as always, for being with us this week. I'm your host, Arthur Arkish, and looking forward to taking a look around the league for the final week of the regular season. We'll break down really just one game, the one that matters, the Grand Poobah. It's the NFC North title game, flexed into primetime with the Packers, the Red Hot Packers, visiting the reeling Lions at Ford Field. We're going to break that one down in great detail with the voice of the Packers, the great Wayne Larrabee, as well as my buddy, former Pro Football Weekly employee turned M-Live Lions beat writer, Nate Atkins. We'll have both of them on the program here shortly, and looking forward to that. Before we do that, we'll bring in Hub Arkish, the publisher and editor of PFW. He has our latest Way We Hear It info. Some stories out of San Diego and New York, also one out of South Bend, Indiana. Look forward to catching up with Hub momentarily. First, I just want to remind you, as I do each week, that if you haven't already headed to iTunes and subscribed to the Pro Football Weekly podcast, well, now is the time to do so. Actually, I guess after you finish listening to the podcast would be the time to do so, but we'd love it if you subscribe, leave us a rating, a comment, a like, a share, all of those great things definitely help this PFW podcast. And in addition to that, we'd also love it if you got to know one of our awesome sponsors, Loot Crate. On a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles, Loot Crate brings you between 4 to 6 of the coolest curated mystery items every month straight to your doorstep. It's the best surprise you know is coming. Our next crate's theme is Origins. We have awesome and exclusive items from your old school favorites. This January, see where it all started and explore the iconic Origins with historic items featuring Superman, Captain America, Mario, and my personal favorite growing up, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, including, as always, our monthly t-shirt and pin. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive this month's crate, and when the cutoff happens, that's it, it's over. Make sure to head to www.lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter the code SHAW to save $3 off any new subscription today. Thank you to our friends at Loot Crate. One more time, www.lootcrate.com. Your code is SHAW, S-H-A-W. All righty. Without further ado, let's get Hub Arkish on the program, and let's find out about the newest Way We Hear It items.
It's time now for the Way We Hear It.
We let off with the situation in San Diego and Mike McCoy very much on the hot seat entering the season. He's apparently going to end the season either on the hot seat or off the seat altogether. Tell us what's going on there.
As near as we can tell, according to our sources, Mike McCoy's future may be a fait accompli. The loss last week to the winless Cleveland Browns may have been just too much for the Spanos family ownership to overcome. At the end of the day, they like Mike McCoy. They think he's a good football coach. Most people around the league agree. But you've got to overcome the surprise last year after going 4-12 and getting a one-year contract extension to come back and only win 5 games most likely this year, even if they upset the Chiefs Sunday at 6. It looks like they are going to be going to Los Angeles. They're going to need to sell more tickets to a new fan base. It's hard to sell a situation where you've been one of the losingest teams in the National Football League over the last couple seasons. Now, you know, at the end of the day, there have been injuries. There's always extenuating circumstances. But there were also some games early on when they were starting out 1-4 where they were making bad mistakes. And those are things that the coach has to take responsibility for. More recently, again, players who appear to be not 100% prepared or at least mentally ready to succeed in tough situations. And so at the end of the day, as much as Dean Spanos, the owner of the Chargers, doesn't want to do it, our sources are telling us that Mike McCoy most likely will be out probably as soon as Black Monday.
So, Hub, if McCoy's out in San Diego, that would make 4 head vacancies. This isn't part of the report. I'm kind of putting you on the spot, but that's okay. I know you're a good improviser. Where do you think this ranks? I mean, we've got Jacksonville now and Los Angeles, of course, and Buffalo most recently, and we're hearing San Diego will soon become the 4th on that list. In terms of desirability, where do you list San Diego?
this is a conversation that we get into in a lot of individual cities who worry that the fan base, the media worries they may not be as competitive as other cities are. At the end of the day, there's only 32 of these jobs. There are thousands of guys who want them. There's maybe 50 to 100 who are qualified for them. You can't afford to turn down an NFL head coaching opportunity on the assumption that you're going to get another one. And so they're all going to be highly desirable. I think that some coaches might be a little skeptical about going to a small market like Jacksonville, where the owner has designs on London, where they've had a hard time selling tickets historically, even when they've been good. You look at the situation in Buffalo, where ownership has been a little, inconsistent, if you will. The Pagulas are new owners. They've only owned the team for 2 years, but they are the ones who hired Rex Ryan, then decided to pull the plug on him before he had finished his second full season. So that's going to scare some folks away a little bit. You take a look at the situation with the Rams, and Jeff Fisher survived everything and anything, and so you got to assume that you're going to get plenty of time to get the job done there. There's plenty of talent there on defense. I don't know what a coach is going to think about Jared Goff. But they also have the advantages of the L.A. marketplace. And then you've got San Diego, similar situation. I know that coaches are going to like the idea of Phillip Rivers, even though he's only got maybe 3-4 years left in his prime. So I would think that if you did have to rank them, that the two more attractive jobs would be San Diego and Los Angeles, possibly in that order, only because of the stability of the Spanos family ownership, and a slightly less attractive, but jobs that there will be plenty of applicants for are Buffalo and Jacksonville.
Right. I agree, especially with San Diego. You still have Phillip Rivers. You have very likely Defensive Rookie of the Year in Joey Bosa. And then when you got guys like Tyrell Williams and Melvin Gordon coming on, it looks like there's actually a really good nucleus there. We didn't even mention Jason Verrett, one of the best corners in football. So I tend to think the Chargers probably at the top of that list. I don't think you either are a Jared Goff fan, so I may give Jacksonville a slight nod at number two just because of all the talent they've brought in, although they do have a big question, of course, under center. Hub, one more story we do want to get to really quick. What's the bigger surprise, that Brandon Marshall is in the middle of another locker room spat heading into the finale with the New York Jets, or that we're hearing maybe both Todd Bowles and Mike McCannon are going to survive the mess?
It's interesting. Brandon Marshall, people should understand at this point, and we've seen this everywhere he's been, the second year is always a problem. It's always a disaster. He's always been good at fooling people for a year or two. But the way that he has fooled both the East Coast media and the national media with his stay with the Jets has been stunning to me, because he's no different of a guy. He's got the same issues that he's had from the day he came into the league, and he is an absolute cancer in a locker room. And now you've got a situation with Sheldon Richardson, who's got his own off-the-field issues, and so you can have the debate as to which guy is more responsible for it. But when you look at their track record, you got to know that Brandon Marshall in your locker room is not a good thing. Nonetheless, Mike McCagnan took a chance. They got a huge Pro Bowl season out of him last year, just like the Bears did in two of his first three seasons, just like the Dolphins did. Broncos got one from him, too. But eventually, he wears out his welcome. So the fact that Todd Bowles hasn't been able to handle that is not all that stunning. What is disappointing, though, is that the entire Jets team appears to have quit over the last 3 or 4 weeks, and there's no way you can ever blame one or two players, no matter how difficult Brandon Marshall and Richardson may be. Right. That doesn't explain why so many other guys are not performing well. As far as Mike McCagnan, I think these guys bought themselves a lot of credibility going 10-6 in their first season. Now, McCagnan really rolled the dice going with the veteran journeyman Ryan Fitzpatrick, spending significantly on a 31-year-old running back in Matt Forte, who didn't disappoint, but who clearly is not have his arrow pointing up right now. You've got the age on Brandon Marshall. You've got the injury to Eric Decker. You've got Nick Mangold looking at retirement a year after DeBrickashaw Ferguson retired. You can't count on Ryan Clady to stay healthy, even though he's a great player when he is. And then you've got the demise of Darrell Revis. So I think that you almost have to point the finger at McCagnan more than Bowles, and yet McCagnan is in complete control. This is not your new NFL franchise where there's 3 or 4 football operations guys and you're not sure who's pulling the trigger. It is him and Todd Bowles reporting directly to the owner, Woody Johnson. And so everything that we're hearing is that they bought enough credibility with that 10-6 rookie campaign that they'll survive this one, but things better get better quick, and I mean 17 when I say quit.
Yeah, and everything I just heard is that maybe Mike Maccagnan isn't getting quite the flack that he should for the mess that he has created. When you talk about the offensive line and the quarterback situation, a lot of holes on this roster. It sounds like they may be heading toward a rebuild. And just very quickly, some context on the Brandon Marshall salary situation. The Jets can save $7.5 million by cutting ties with Marshall, and it looks like that may happen. He may have worn out his welcome. And with Sheldon Richardson, he may just be a loose enough cannon that he doesn't even have any trade value, which is pretty unbelievable for such a talented guy who should be in the prime of his career. But I don't think it's any certainty that he'll be back with the Jets either, so that'll be worth watching. Hub, one more quick story. It sounds like if NFL owners who have a head coaching vacancy are looking to dip their toes into the college coaching ranks, they're not going to be heading to South Bend and Brian Kelly, are they?
It doesn't seem likely, although our sources are telling us that Brian Kelly's representatives are contacting every one of the 32 teams, letting them know that he would be interested if somebody came calling. There's even been some suggestion he might consider a coordinator job on the offensive side of the football. He wouldn't be an outstanding candidate for it, but then he's not an outstanding candidate to be an NFL head coach either. Right. You know, in the NFL, you'd have to worry about academic scandals. So the fact that Notre Dame was just forced to forfeit all their wins from 2012-2013 because of a scandal that occurred on his watch is going to be a big black mark on Brian Kelly in the college ranks. It might not hurt him so much in the NFL. What's going to kill him in the NFL is he has the talent that some people believe should have allowed him to compete for a national championship this year. Instead, they went 4-8. So it is just ironic that for the first time we're hearing about a tremendous amount of outreach from Kelly's people trying to get him a job in the NFL, when in fact his stock has never been lower. There are no takers. There is no interest right now. He probably will survive the season at Notre Dame because of the way they do things, but this is a coach whose arrow is definitely pointing in the wrong direction.
And Hub, just to kind of put an NFL bow on it, there are going to be some vacancies. We talked about several of them already. I'm guessing there's always going to be at least one or two more that surprise us a bit. Is the next Jim Harbaugh or Chip Kelly, and I just mean in that those are the last guys who have made the jump and had an opportunity, not that the next Jim Harbaugh from a success standpoint is out there. Any names you're hearing that maybe will join the popular ones in the NFL, whether it's McDaniels or Shanahan, Coughlin, et cetera?
You know, it's interesting, Arthur. You look at the success Harbaugh had, and yet he's never been happier getting back to Michigan in the college ranks. You look at the little bit of success Chip Kelly had in Philadelphia before it went south, and the rumors won't stop that he's heading back to the college ranks, although maybe not now that the LSU and Oregon jobs have filled. So, you know, there's some great coaches in college football right now. When you look at a Rick Peterson, you know, and the job he did at Washington, a David Shaw with Stanford, but they seem to be getting more reasons to stay in the college ranks than they're going to find in the NFL ranks, particularly now that the pay scales have pretty much balanced out. A lot of top college guys are earning pretty close to, if not as much as the top NFL guys are anyway.
Right. So, yeah, this may not be the offseason where we see another guy make the jump, although I think David Shaw's name will remain a hot one, frankly, until he once again kind of closes the door on any possibility. So that's going to do it with this week's Way We Hear It. Hub, as always, we appreciate it. We're going to get your buddy Wayne Larvey on the show, your former employee Nate Atkins, to break down the game of the week here shortly, Green Bay-Detroit. But we'll let you go first. Thank you again so much, and have a very happy new year.
All right, take care. Same to you, and of course to all of our listeners. We hope the new year is healthy and prosperous and as happy as it can be.
And thank you once again to Hub Arkish, the hardest working man in the industry, dropping the good scoops as he always does, and we will continue to monitor the situations both in New York and San Diego, and of course all across the league as the Pro Football Weekly podcast heads into the postseason and then the offseason. Before we do that, as I mentioned at the top, we've got one game with some serious playoff implications left. The Detroit Lions, in search of their first division title in 23 years and their first ever NFC North title. Yeah, the team standing in their way is the visiting Packers. They'll be looking for their 11th division title since the Lions last won theirs in 1993. And to break it all down is my good friend Nate Atkins. Nate hopped on the Lions beat around mid-season with M Live, and he's been doing a terrific job covering Matthew Stafford and Golden Tate and that whole interesting club that Jim Caldwell is overseeing. It's really been a special season for them, but to find out if they will be able to punctuate that special season with a division title, let's see what Nate Atkins thinks.
Too much, Arthur. Just here waiting to head into another locker room session with these guys and kind of see what their pulse is like leading up to this big game.
Yeah, a big game it is. And for those who don't remember, of course, Nate Atkins, a Pro Football Weekly alum, and he's living the charmed life now because he gets to join a team mid-season on the beat, and it just so happens to be the Lions, who have been one of the NFL's best stories. Nate, what's your experience been like so far covering this team?
Yeah, it's certainly been something to step into it. You know, I went my first month or so here, and before I'd ever seen a Lions loss. And so guys who covered this team in 2008 when they went winless thought that was kind of funny. But, they've stumbled since, so it's been kind of interesting just to see some of the ups and downs of their season. I've only been here for half of it, but just to think that they started 1-3 and they ripped off all those wins, and now they're here trying to avoid a three-game losing streak. It certainly hasn't lacked its drama.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And thank you for taking a couple minutes. Of course, we are going to preview the big Sunday night, the NFC North title game for the fourth year in a row. The division will come down to week 17, and this one flexed into primetime, so it will conclude the NFL regular season. Nate, you were out in Arlington last week, and the Lions played tough for a half, and then the wheels came off. What's sort of your feeling in terms of them turning it around? I mean, what do you think is, I guess the better way to put it is, what do you think has gone wrong in the previous 2 weeks on these NFC East road trips where the Lions haven't been as competitive as they had been?
I think there's a few different things going on. I think number one, these are the toughest teams they've played all season long as far as where they are right now. And you just kind of see teams like that have brought out their flaws in a big way. So when they were on this winning streak, you know, their flaws were pretty present, you know, as far as not getting a pass rush and not running the ball super effectively. They just found ways to win around that. And now they're facing teams that are just exposing that pretty badly in certain ways. So I think that's part of it. Injuries at those particular areas have really started to hit them when they're already not strong there. So now that they're down to their fourth and fifth string running backs and you know, they're without their starting center, Travis Swanson, for the past three games. And, you know, and they're missing Darius Slay, their top cornerback, Ziggy Ansah, their top pass rusher, is banged up. So every team in the league has injuries. And I think the Lions, you could argue, were the least injured team in this division this season. But the problem for them is right in this playoff push against the best teams they're facing, they're missing guys at the positions where they can't afford to miss guys. And so I think that's been the biggest problem. And that's the number one thing I want to see this week is, can they get a Theo Riddick back? Can they get Darius Slay back? Travis Swanson, Slay and Swanson practiced today while Riddick sat out. So I think they're going to absolutely have them to have a chance to win, because based on the past 2 weeks, they're not beating good teams without those guys.
Right, and I'll tell you what, I think everyone would expect the Lions to miss Darius Slay. He's become a household name, one of the NFL's highest paid corners, having another nice season. And Theo Riddick, everyone knows what he can do in the passing game, and certainly what Detroit hasn't been able to do on the ground all season long. The loss of Travis Swanson maybe has flown a little bit more under the radar, but Graham Glasgow has had his struggles, certainly. Last week, I know he got beat by a sack with Malik Collins, and it looks like against 2 weeks ago against Steve Spagnuolo and last week against Rob Marinelli, it sort of felt like the Lions line was having a hard time adjusting to those pressures, and that probably doesn't bode well against a really aggressive coordinator Sunday night in Dom Capers, I wouldn't think, and that probably emphasizes what you just said about getting Glasgow backs first and foremost.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I think Glasgow, for being a rookie left guard moving to center out of the blue like he did, I think has done about as well as you could expect a rookie to do. But he's struggling with some real massive nose tackles, whether it's Malik Collins, like you mentioned, or Damon Harrison. They're just, it's a tough battle for a rookie center to deal with. And the way this Lions team is constructed on offense is they have to avoid the interior pressures. They have to let Matthew Stafford step up in the pocket and out and kind of use his underrated mobility to extend plays and get receivers open who are somewhat struggling against man coverage. And so I think the best way to throw them off is to kind of hit right in the center and make Stafford kind of scramble outward, and that's sort of what's happening. I mean, I think they've, you know, one of the bigger effects of this too is it's sort of limited what they can do at left guard. You know, Glasgow was starting to get a lot more action there when Swanson was in. All of a sudden now, you know, they don't have those options, and so they're kind of going. The last game they went back and forth between Lakin Tomlinson and rookie Joe Dahl. So there's a little bit of shuffling going on in the interior, and it's throwing them off a little bit. That's for sure.
You know, Nate, I know the Lions' offense has been a little inconsistent of late. I know Matthew Stafford is battling through that finger injury and maybe hasn't been quite as sharp as he had been as he had started to gain steam in the MVP discussion. But I would have to think, and correct me if I'm wrong, you got Aaron Rodgers coming in. He's the hottest quarterback in the NFL. Jordy Nelson, the hottest wide receiver. This offense has looked virtually unstoppable of late. I mean, the concerns on defense have to be just as great. I know it's encouraging that Darius Slay returned to practice, but what do you think they can do to potentially slow Rodgers, or is it just sort of imminent that this is going to have to be a shootout if they're going to get that division title, the first one in 23 years?
Yeah, I think they're going to have a really hard time matching up against the Packers' passing offense, because in some ways it's kind of similar to what they just got torched by in Dallas. You've got a mobile quarterback, you've got an outstanding pass-protecting line, and you've got a go-to receiver that just presents matchup problems when Darius Slay isn't out there. So I think they have to have Slay so he can travel with Jordy Nelson. We saw what Minnesota went through when they didn't travel with Jordy Nelson. And so yeah, I think that's number one. I think you've got to stop the run, obviously, too, and I think they have a better chance to do that. I actually thought they did it okay against Dallas outside of one horrible, you know, 155-yard run by Zeke Elliott. But it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to hold them down. I mean, you're like you said, they're the hottest offense out there, playing in a dome as well. It's going to help them out. I think the best they can do is try to tackle underneath like they've done so well this season, sort of get off the field in some of these third down situations. And that starts by really gobbling up the run. I think that's the best they can hope for, and not get into a game where they're sort of just hoping that Aaron Rodgers misses as he kind of scrambles around back there.
Spending just a few more minutes with Nate Atkins. You can find his work at MLive and certainly on Twitter at Nate Atkins. Check out all his Lions stuff. Nate's an old pal from the Pro Football Weekly days. And what do you think? Just, I know you weren't even on the beat yet, but I'm sure you're familiar with what happened back in week three. The Packers got off to a huge early lead and then held off the Lions' second half comeback. One thing from that game was Marvin Jones blowing up, and I feel like he's a guy who has not been quite as consistently impactful really in the second half of the season. What do you think he can do? I know you said that some of the receivers have struggled against man coverage. Is he one of those guys you're referring to? And how important do they, or how much is the need for them to get some of these other guys going other than Golden Tate and an Eric Ebron?
Yeah, I think Marvin Jones is probably the guy as far as talent who's struggling the most, you know, against what he's facing right now. Man coverage is kind of doing it to him. It's happened against great cornerbacks a couple weeks ago with Janoris Jenkins, and then even last week against Dallas it happened. He's held to just one catch for 16 yards last week, and it's tough to figure out. I know in that game against the Packers, he really succeeded against a lot of zone coverage, and so it's been man that's given him a problem lately. There have been times when, I know a couple weeks ago, or against the Bears actually, so team you're obviously paying close attention to, it finally worked with Marvin Jones where they were able to get him caught in some pass interference plays down the field, called on the defense. And I think that's really, from my perspective, where he could kind of step forward a little bit more is being a little more aggressive about trying to draw some fouls and trying to, you know, play that game receivers play about trying to get the calls. It would be his best shot, because I think the chemistry is still there between Stafford and Jones. You saw it a couple weeks ago against New York when they brought a fire blitz and Stafford just heaved a fade route out and Jones made a tremendous catch, and I don't know how they pulled that play off. So I think the chemistry is there. It's finding ways for him to win these battles in really tight man coverage like that, and it's been a struggle for a couple weeks, but you know, for as much as they're is they're paying him and relying on him in an offense that hasn't run the ball the way the way they want to, for sure. I think that's going to be imperative to get him going.
Yeah, I certainly agree, and I guess maybe that's one silver lining here for the Lions and what really does kind of look like a lopsided matchup, although all bets are off in a Week 17 play-in game, I understand. But the Packers secondary has struggled a little bit. Adam Thielen had a huge game last week. Alshon Jeffrey obviously had the big fourth quarter along with Matt Barkley the week before, so maybe that's an opportunity. Nate, just kind of on the way out, got a couple more minutes here, and thank you again for the time. Talk to me about Stafford. How much do you think the finger is an issue? And, you know, in 2014, it was at Lambeau, but the Packers and Lions played in a Week 17 play-in game. Obviously, the Packers won, but Stafford was pretty darn good. That flew under the radar because Rodgers returned from the calf injury and had one of his Rodgers performances. But how's Stafford doing with the finger, and what do you expect for him in, I guess, the biggest game of his life?
Yeah, you know, Stafford, we actually just talked to him today, and he came out to the presser wearing his one-finger glove. So he's been a little tongue-in-cheek about it. He's working through that. And he and the Lions have downplayed that idea a lot. I mean, he's taken personal blame for his four interceptions the past 3 weeks, talking about decision-making. But you just feel like there's something more there going on with the finger. I mean, not just the timing of how he's kind of gone sour in his production, but you see certain balls he'll throw just don't have the same zip. They're just the timing will be slightly off, and I think it's just making that slight difference there. When you mix it in with what else is going on, where he is facing some more interior pressure, where his receivers are having a harder time getting open, I think that's just sort of exacerbated it all. So I don't know that it's affecting him hugely, but the little that it is keeping him from being at his absolute best makes it tough when he does have some other struggles going on here. So, you know, they've lived and died with him all season. I thought he was absolutely brilliant up until he got that finger hurt, and he's just kind of struggled through it for a couple weeks. And I don't know if it can go away in time for them, you know, to obviously play the Packers or if at all this season, but right. It's got to be something where they've got to get a little bit going as far as guys getting open and have him sort of be a little bit more cautious when he's throwing the ball.
Yeah, Nate, I know the timing of this has been unfortunate, obviously, not only, as you said, with the two toughest tests coming at this point with the Lions just needing one more victory, but then, of course, with Stafford's injury coinciding with that. I have seen some reports that maybe if the Lions do lose and end the game on a three-game losing streak and miss the playoffs altogether, perhaps the Jim Caldwell rumblings, you know, pop up again with the Bob Quinn, the rookie GM that, you know, inherited Caldwell, obviously, decided to retain him. Do you think, is this a must-win for Caldwell, or is that probably taking this a little bit too far after everything they've done this year?
Well, I think it could potentially be a must-win depending on how that Washington Redskins game turns out. You know, if the Redskins lose and the Lions can get in anyway, obviously that would give him another chance if he goes to 9-7 to get a playoff game and see what he can do. And that's not to say that anything's for certain one way or another. Right. Just think, you know, it will get dicey though if it goes from 9-4 in the driver's seat of the NFC North to 9-7 and out of the playoffs. That's a tough look for many coaches to be able to get across to their ownership, regardless of where they are. And, you know, when you have a general manager and Bob Quinn who didn't hire Jim Caldwell, I think those questions are always going to be there. So we've asked Caldwell a little bit about it this week, and, you know, he's obviously deflected and he's focused all on this week and this game. But he wasn't ignorant to the fact that those questions are going to be out there, that there is a little sense of pressure regarding this game. And I think it just speaks to sort of what they're feeling organization-wide to not let this slip away, because it, you know, they finished the year against three of the best teams in the league, but it still would obviously not sit well to go from 9-4 to 9-7 and out of the playoffs.
Right, right. He overcame the slow start a year ago, and now we'll see if he can overcome potentially a slow finish. Nate, I'm sorry I got to you late, and I got to let you run just on the way out. We're taping on Wednesday, so I'll give you a pass if it's too early. But do you have a feeling which way this game goes Sunday night? Do you have a pick?
Yeah, I'm interested to talk to a few guys and learn a little bit more about it. I think at this moment it's obvious that I think it's definitely in the Packers' favor right now. I think the longer week helps them out. The availability for the Lions is going to be the absolute key. I think if they get their three guys back that I mentioned, Swanson, Riddick, and Slay, I think they're right in this at home with the environment there. But I still think at this point the Packers need to be the favorite, you know, at least until something else comes about with the availability of these other guys.
All right, that makes sense. Awesome stuff from Nate. It's such a pleasure to get to talk again in obviously a very different setting, but I hope you enjoy Sunday night, and this special season can end on a neat note one way or the other for you. Thanks for being on the podcast, and let's circle back and talk again after the season, okay?
Yeah, for sure, Arthur. Thanks for having me on. I always appreciate talking to you guys at PFW.
And once again, thank you to Nate Atkins. It felt like old times having the PFW crew back together. Nate hopped on the Lions beat around midseason, and boy, it's been a fun ride for him along with that team. Looking forward to now getting the vantage point from the visiting side, from the radio broadcast booth, the one and only Wayne Larvey. And Wayne actually did the Bears games many moons ago with Hub, and I got to know him and his family well, and this is a particular treat to now have him on the PFW podcast. No one in the business does it better than Wayne. No one works harder than he does, and we appreciate him taking out a few minutes now to talk about the Packers in advance of this Week 17 NFC North title game.
Hi, Art. How you doing?
I am doing well, and we thank you so much for joining the podcast. This is a huge treat to get the voice of the Green Bay Packers ahead of a NFC North title game for the fourth year in a row. Does this seem you're kind of getting used to this, I would imagine?
Yeah, you know, 4 years in a row on this, and, you know, people keep asking, has the rest of the division closed the gap on the Packers? Well, the fact is the division's come down to the last game of the season, of the regular season, each of the last 4 years now. So I would say, yeah, that gap has been closed.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And at the same time, obviously the Packers remain that common denominator in this link. So still finding a way to at least, you know, extend the season that far. And, you know, when you look at this on paper, Wayne, and I know all bets are off in a play-in game on the final Sunday, the final game of the regular season, but it looks like a bit of a mismatch because the Packers seem to be rolling. What have you seen over this five-game stretch? It's been 5 weeks now since Aaron Rodgers, of course, famously vowed to run the table, and here we are.
The biggest difference has been, now the offense was on track long before the winning streak began, I thought.
Right.
At least the passing offense was. But the biggest difference in this streak, especially in December, has been turnovers. They have forced 14 turnovers over the course of the streak. They've only turned it over once. They lost a fumble during this five-game skid, or should say five-game winning streak.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that stands out are the turnovers and the points off turnovers. In December alone, the Packers scored 52 of their 81 points off turnovers this season during that stretch.
Wow. And that's, I know, been a familiar recipe for, frankly, Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers as long as they've been doing this, always securing the football and often benefiting from an opportunistic defense. When I hear that, Wayne, I think what stands out to me the most, Clay Matthews, not much of a factor until last week. It seems like everyone wants to talk about this Aaron Rodgers MVP surge, and with good reason, but it also looks like Clay Matthews appeared to turn a corner, and they got Nick Perry last week, too.
Yeah, Nick came back with a club on his hand, not quite as effective. That'll take some getting used to, but just to have him out there, I think, and more than anything else, I know he leads the team in sacks, but really his best attribute is the way he sets the edge against the run. He's a former defensive lineman, and so that's a big factor in defense having him back on the field. Clay, on the other hand, has felt better and better each of the last couple of weeks, and now it finally manifests itself in that game against Minnesota. He made some great plays, looked like the Clay Matthews of old, and hopefully he can continue to build on that for the Packers.
Yeah, no doubt. That would be a good development, certainly, for that defense. And we are spending a few minutes chatting with the voice of the Green Bay Packers, the one and only Wayne Larvey, an old friend, and so pleased to have him on the podcast. Wayne, what jumps out at you in this one in terms of, I mean, where should the Packers' concern be? I know they're going on the road, and they have a lot of momentum built up. Is it that secondary? It was Adam Thielen last week after Matt Barkley and Alshon Jeffery in the fourth quarter the week prior.
Yeah, I can't agree with you more. I think that's really where the concern is on this defense. You know, up front they're okay. They're fine in the linebacking core, but that secondary has been, and not so much the safeties, but the corners. And here's the problem, and this has been ongoing all season. They have been wildly inconsistent, but you know, that's what you should have expected. I mean, you went in there with a bunch of second-year cornerbacks, and, you know, Sam Shields was your veteran. He goes out in the first quarter of the first game of the season, never to return this year. And so now you've got a bunch of second-year guys that you're targeting to be stepping into the number one and number two role in that secondary, and even the number three role, Ladarius Gunter, who Mike McCarthy said yesterday has probably been their most consistent cornerback. He's been he was a rookie free agent 2 years ago, so you've got young guys back there, and their performance is going to be up and down. 1 week, Demaryius Randall looks like he belongs to the Pro Bowl, and the next week you wonder, was he a rookie free agent? You know, right, that kind of thing. So the swings of performance, the big plays given up in the secondary, that's been the concern for this Green Bay team, in if there is a concern defensively during this winning streak.
Right, and both of these teams, Wayne, are pretty different, I think, than they were way back in Week 3 when the Packers jumped out to the early lead in Lambeau over Detroit and then kind of hung on for victory. But even in that one, you know, last week we saw Adam Thielen go off for, I think, 210 and a pair of touchdowns. It was Marvin Jones back in Week 3 going off. He has kind of since went quiet, but I'd imagine he'd kind of be at top of the concern that Green Bay is dealing with. And I'd also imagine, are you guys hearing Casey Hayward's name at all in Green Bay this year? Has that kind of been a tough pill to swallow? I know he's leading the NFL in interceptions and certainly coincides with some of the struggles they've had.
You know, no question. I mean, some people are thinking about that you know, you wish, and hindsight is always 20/20. Casey had a nondescript year a season ago here, yep. So I don't think anybody blinked that he was let go. And he went to free agency, went to San Diego. He's had a great year. He's a good person, good player. We all knew that, but they felt they were invested in these young cornerbacks. And, you know, what they didn't count on was Sam Shields going out for the season. And right, and that, I think, is really what put him behind the eight ball to the cornerback spot.
Okay, and in terms of just Ladarius Gunter, was he inactive last week with the elbow, I believe, and they're expecting him to return this week, that's correct?
No, he played last week. He went out with the elbow injury early in that ball game, and McCarthy's hopeful he can play this week.
Okay, got it. Wayne, tell us a little bit just about what Aaron Rodgers and Jordy Nelson have done during this stretch. It's been pretty remarkable to watch, and I know you know, Rodgers has been a little banged up at times, but it looked like he's over the calf injury now. What have you seen over this recent stretch when they've just been virtually unstoppable?
They've just gotten on the same page. I think Jordy is returning to form. You know, he's been healthy. I mean, there's no question about that, but this injury, this ACL injury, it takes a year to overcome, a year after surgery, and right, and he's barely a year after surgery. So, you know, you're looking at a situation where he had to kind of get back into the rhythm of the offense and the rhythm of working with Aaron Rodgers, and I think that's really been accomplished over a course of time. And, you know, when I look at the way they've played together, you know, it's a little different. Does Jordy have the same speed he had before the injury? I don't know. I don't see a difference, to be honest with you. But he's coming out of the slot more often than not now. And that's made a big difference in terms of that's the adjustment they made with Jordy for whatever reason. Randall Cobb has been banged up, the slot receiver, the starter normally, but they moved Jordy into that position. And that's where Jordy's gotten a lot of his work done this year. And you know, obviously 14 receiving touchdowns. But now what we've seen in the last couple of weeks is a little bit more of the vertical play returning to his game, and that's been a welcome sight because they needed that.
Yeah, no doubt, and you know, that could probably bode well, I would think, Sunday night as Detroit lost its nickelback in Quandre Diggs a couple weeks ago, and they've been struggling, whether it's Aza Jackson in the slot or certainly Johnson Batamosi, and Darius Slay's absence was pretty bad Monday night, although it sounds like they could get Slay back, so that would be huge. That could be the biggest difference in this game for Detroit, I would think. Wayne, what do you recall about the game 2 years ago, Week 17, Lions-Packers? The Rodgers injury, I think that probably overshadowed. Stafford played pretty well that day, too, at Lambeau, didn't he?
He really did. He played well. I mean, they had Ndamukong Suh in the middle of that defense. That was a heavyweight fight. And, in fact, Detroit had the lead at one point of that game, and the Packers had to come from behind to win the game after Rodgers returned following halftime. That was a big lift emotionally when he came back into the game and just walked into the stadium, matter of fact, after halftime, after the two teams were already on the field. But You know, I just remember the Packers had, and this was a good Detroit team. I honestly think the Detroit team of 2 years ago is much better team than this one.
Yep.
I don't think it was Calvin Johnson on the field. You had, you know, the big defensive tackle and Ndamukong Suh. You had, it was a better team. It was a much better team. But you could probably say the same thing for the Packers. That was the last time they had a Super Bowl caliber team, the Green Bay Packers. And they, that was a heck of a ball game. And then Detroit lost that game, went down to Dallas, and should have beaten the Cowboys down there. So that was a good Detroit team, and it was a heck of a game.
Wayne, what do you think in terms of this? And I know no one wants to look past Sunday night, and certainly in a veteran locker room and a veteran coach like Mike McCarthy, I don't envision that would happen. If the Packers are fortunate enough to get in the playoffs with Aaron Rodgers as hot as he is, what's this team's ceiling? I mean, it feels like one that no one else in the conference wants to see just because Rodgers is so hot, just because they've gotten a little bit healthier on defense all of a sudden.
Yeah, I think, you know, the ceiling is only, it's going to be measured by its defense and how well they can cope defensively. You know, now we've seen in these last several years, Arthur, that in order for the Packers to win a playoff game, Aaron Rodgers has to play pretty well. Not pretty well, probably better than that. And so that's a big factor. This is not 2010, okay? There are no Charles Woodsons out there. There is not a Nick Collins caliber player out there. There isn't even really a Tremont Williams, a consistent cornerback like Tremont Williams on this squad. So this is a very different defense. Clay Matthews is just coming back from injury. He's not the player today he was back in 2010 because of the injury. I think he still is capable of reaching that level. There's no doubt in my mind about that. He's still a great player. But what I'm trying to tell people is that, hey, the defense is going to kind of dictate where the Packers go and how far they go. If you go back to 2010, it was the defense, more often than not, down the stretch that closed the deal against the Bears with the interception by Nick Collins in the regular season finale to clinch a playoff spot in the NFC, in the divisional playoff game, or, you know, I beg your pardon, the wild card game.
Right.
Tremont Williams with an interception to Philadelphia. Then in the NFC championship game, Sam Shields had the interception to Caleb Haney. Time and time again, it was the defense on the field at the end that had to win those games. I don't know. This defense has yet to prove they could do that.
Just a couple more minutes with Wayne Larrivee, the voice of the Green Bay Packers, and we thank him for joining the PFW podcast ahead of the Week 17 primetime NFC North title game. Should be a ton of fun. Wayne, what do you think about the guys other than Jordy Nelson? It's been fun to watch the growth of some of the compliments, whether it's Ty Montgomery switching to running back, whether it's Davante Adams in a breakout season. How have you felt about the complimentary parts and how they've sort of helped this offense? I don't know if I want to say take the next step, but maybe become a little bit more diverse.
Well, I think, you know, Davante Adams has been the most interesting player to watch. He's a guy that didn't have a whole lot of confidence coming into this season. Aaron talked about it a little bit off the record about the fact that he's such a confidence player that they need to get him going early, make him, give him a catch and let him get that feel. They did that throughout the season. He's had some breakout games. He's had a few drops in the last couple of weeks here. A couple of them would have been touchdowns. It would have blown out the Chicago game once and for all, but he dropped the ball. That's happened, and they all drop the ball. Jordy drops the ball on occasion and dropped a bunch of passes in the Super Bowl game, and if right. he had held on to half of those passes, he would have set a record right. For receiving in that game. But nonetheless, Devontae's come along very well. I think he understands his role, where to go, how to play in this offense. I think the other complimentary piece of late that has come to play and been a big factor is Jared Cook. Numbers aren't huge, but the numbers that he gets are very important in terms of first downs and moving the chains and that type of thing and opening up the field for others.
Yeah, no doubt. And we were treated, if that's the right word, to the tackle-breaking display by Ty Montgomery as well at Soldier Field a couple weeks ago. That was truly something. Seems like he got slowed a little bit by Minnesota last week, not that they necessarily needed him. But, Wayne, do you think is this a team that could potentially show up with a running game in January again too, or do you think they kind of are what they are with this spread offense and sort of the horizontal passing attack?
I think they have a running game, but I don't think it's the traditional running game people think. But with Ty Montgomery, you have a running game and you have a great change of pace in Christian Michael. And we've seen flashes of Christian Michael. Now, the Packers didn't block anybody for running the football last week. They were getting so much done through the air, they didn't even try to run it very much against the Vikings. But I think if they had to run the ball, I think they have the components of a good ground game when you have Ty Montgomery, physical 220-pound runner and a receiver, great receiver out of the backfield because of his wide receiver background. And in Christian Michael, who has that great burst and can take it all the way anytime, as he did in Chicago from 42 yards out.
Wayne, do you think that those two have shown enough to be able to pick up Michael off the street in, what, early December, late November, and then Montgomery's growth? Does Eddie Lacy still have a role on this team? I know he's entering an unrestricted free agent offseason.
It'd be interesting to see what happens there and to see, you know, I would think the Packers would want him back. I don't think there's any question about that. They'd like to have him back. But it probably would be on one of those one-year prove-it type contracts. Given Eddie's injury this year, maybe that's his best shot to come back to the Packers, a system he knows, play and have a good year in Green Bay, and then reopen the free agency door again.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. And just on the way out, and we thank Wayne Larrivee again for his great insight on the Pro Football Weekly podcast this afternoon. What about the MVP, Wayne? It's been kind of a weird year for it, where there's a lot of guys and maybe no one that stands out above the rest. Is that how you view it? Do you think Aaron Rodgers has a shot at this award? Obviously he has a shot, but where do you think he factors into it?
I think Aaron Rodgers has a great shot at the award, and I would have no problem. I think he should get the award, but I think the person that will get the award, and I would have no argument with this either, is Zeke Elliott. Mm-hmm. He's made the difference in Dallas. I know everybody talks about the quarterback, but that running back and what he's done, the things he can do, and I love the way he picks up the blitz. I've never seen a rookie running back on the NFL level pick up the blitz the way he does. I just think he's the MVP of the league this year, the way the Cowboys have taken off. But certainly I would make a case for Aaron Rodgers as well. The turnaround that he's made this season has been remarkable.
Yeah, no question about it. It's been a lot of fun to watch. And, Wayne, we are out of time. I appreciate it so much. I hope you enjoy the game Sunday night. And we'd love to have you back on again soon here to discuss the Packers moving forward.
Thank you, Arthur. I hope we get a chance to do that.
Well, there you have it. I feel that the stage has been sufficiently set for the best game of the weekend. It's going to be a ton of fun at Ford Field Sunday night. And some other interesting games, too, of course. Washington actually controls its playoff fate, it's not assuming anything. Washington, with a win, I believe, would lock up that last wild card spot. They have the tiebreaker over the Packers, so they'll play a big game at home versus the Giants, who are keeping their foot on the gas despite already being locked into that number five seed. You've got the Chiefs and the Patriots and the Raiders and the Falcons and the Seahawks all also jostling for positioning. They're already locked in, but for seeding. So to check out the breakdowns of every Week 17 NFL game, make sure that you head to profootballweekly.com. You'll find all of that there. For this week, we decided to focus on the big one and the Way We Hear It info, and in order to do that, we still need to thank one more time Hub Arkish for the great Way We Hear It information, Nate Atkins for telling us what's going on with the Lions, and last but not least, Wayne Larrivee for filling us in on the Packers. It was a fun show. I hope you had as much fun as I did. I hope that you are already subscribed to the PFW podcast, but one more reminder in case you are not, you can find us over on iTunes, and we'd love it if you subscribe and leave us a rating while you are there. We would also love it if you come back next week. We will be gearing up for the postseason and lots of fun in store in the weeks and months ahead on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. As always, we're so thankful that you are here with us and look forward to bringing it to you again next week. That will be 2017, so we hope you have a very happy and healthy and safe New Year's, and can't wait to be back with you next week doing it all over again on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Have a great week. Happy New Year's.